South Korea announced a very large AI and semiconductor build-out today, and the first thing to say is that the numbers are messy because the plan is being reported through several overlapping slices. Al Jazeera has the broadest version. President Lee Jae-myung stood with the heads of Samsung and SK Hynix and described more than $1 trillion of investment across chips, physical AI, and data centers. CNBC and other market reports describe Samsung and SK Hynix plans that could run as high as 2,000 trillion won over 10 years. AP's version puts a more concrete piece of it at 800 trillion won, about $518 billion, for a Southwest chipmaking hub with four new fabs. So I don't want to add those figures together. They are different windows onto the same national push.
That distinction matters because the story changes if you treat it as a pile of press release numbers. A trillion-dollar headline is one thing. A government convening the two dominant memory companies and talking about fabs, packaging, physical AI, and data centers in one room is a different thing. The unit of competition is no longer only the accelerator or the model. It is whether a country can make the memory, power the sites, train the technicians, move the water, and get the permits without each layer fighting the next one.
Right. And the memory company part isn't decorative. Samsung and SK Hynix together sit right at the choke point for high bandwidth memory, which is why this reads differently from a generic industrial policy announcement. If AI infrastructure is now constrained by memory supply and data center buildout, then a country with the world's two biggest memory makers has a reason to turn the whole stack into a coordinated program. The reports also mention specialized regions for components, packaging, and data centers. That sounds bureaucratic until you remember that a memory bottleneck can decide what a model lab can serve 6 months from now.
And the power figure in the related reports pulls it out of finance language. One of the TechMeme-linked reports cites 18.4 gigawatts for AI compute build-out. Even if the exact scope changes, that isn't venture math. That is electricity, interconnection, and local politics. You can't announce your way into that. Somebody has to decide where the substations go. Somebody has to absorb the complaints when the site needs land. Somebody has to make the grid plan match the chip plan.
I would set it at meaningful, but not mystical. South Korea didn't become the only AI infrastructure state this morning, but it did make a public claim. AI capacity is now a cabinet-level industrial system, and it also answers one thing from the last few days of Braid without replaying it. We spent the weekend talking about access to models and access to chips. Today's Korean announcement is access in physical form. It says, if the path to the model runs through memory and data centers, then the state wants to shape the path before it hardens around someone else's geography.
That keeps the story proportionate. There is a lot of temptation to turn every infrastructure announcement into a civilizational chessboard. But the concrete action here is smaller and stronger. South Korea is trying to make the capital plan, the power plan, and the company plan legible to each other. That is enough. If those pieces stay synchronized, the country has a better shot at selling the memory and fabrication layer into everybody else's AI ambitions. If they don't, the trillion-dollar number becomes a monument to coordination failure.
AI Engineer published a dense set of agent talks today, and the Chronicle talk gives us the concrete artifact, a framework for state capture and replay in production agents. The talk's premise is the pain point. Agents are non-deterministic enough that a failed run can be hard to reproduce, and once the model has called tools, read files, changed state, or branched through a multi-step plan, the usual software debugging instinct starts to break. You don't only want logs, you want a replayable account of what the system believed, saw, called, and changed.
That is the agent version of realizing the screenshot isn't the incident report. A user says the agent deleted the wrong file or called the wrong workflow, and the model's final answer is almost useless as evidence. The artifact is the trace: which prompt state was active, which toolset was visible, what came back from the environment, which action was authorized, and whether the model or the surrounding system made the decision.
The other AI engineer items rhyme with that, without needing to become separate conference recaps. One talk is about deterministic control planes for non-deterministic systems, Another is about the fat agent problem and a semantic tool router, which is a concrete fix for giving a model too many possible tools at once. And another pushes composition over inheritance for agents, meaning you assemble smaller roles and capabilities rather than trying to grow one giant creature that knows every policy, tool, and domain rule.
The tool-router point is practical. A model with 50 tools doesn't have 50 powers. It has 50 ways to be slightly confused. If the router narrows the working set to the tools that fit the user's intent, you reduce the cognitive load on the model, and you also get a cleaner place to enforce policy. The router can say, "This is a billing task," so the model sees billing tools and billing rules. It doesn't need the deployment controls, the CRM write path, and the analytics export in the same moment.
That is how the agent infra story avoids the hype cycle. None of this says agents are solved. It says serious agent work is moving out of the prompt and into the surrounding record, traces, replay, tool selection, external authorization, and smaller delegated roles. The model still reasons. The system around it decides what state is durable, what action is allowed, and what evidence survives after the run.
I like the restraint in that. The early agent demo says, "Look, the model can use a browser and a terminal." The production talk says, "Can we replay the moment where it believed the wrong thing? Can we prove which input changed the action? Can we make the next run fail the same way so a human can inspect it?" That is less cinematic, but it is much closer to how software becomes something people trust with real accounts and real files.
The security-paper badge today gives that agent-infra section a harder edge. The main archive paper by Shruti Lohani and Avijit Kumar argues that perfect prompt injection prevention can't be guaranteed inside a shared representational pipeline. Their term is semantic faithful control. Control decisions like refusals, tool authorization, policy routing, and memory writes should depend on the meaning of untrusted input, not on irrelevant encoding tricks. Their claim is that shared embedding architectures without enforced trusted and untrusted separation can't guarantee that property perfectly.
That is narrower than prompt injection can never be mitigated, and it is more useful. The paper isn't saying every defense is pointless. It is saying that if trusted instructions and untrusted content go through the same representational channel, and the same channel influences the control decision, then there is no perfect in-channel classifier that will recover provenance every time. They compare it to code and data confusion in older machine architectures. Buffer overflows didn't disappear because people wrote one better string filter. They needed hardware, runtime, language, and process changes.
The paper even names the architectures that escape its theorem: separate trusted and untrusted encoders, hard-typed attention or segment masks, and external policy engines where tool authorization or memory writes are decided outside the transformer. That maps almost too neatly onto the AI engineer talks. If you want an agent to do consequential work, the model can propose, summarize, and reason, but the privileged decisions need a different enforcement path.
And then the supporting papers make the same discomfort feel less theoretical. The MetaBreak paper looks at special token manipulation and says attackers can use chat template structure itself as part of the attack surface. Their reported results are specific. When content moderation is present, MetaBreak beats PAP by 11.6% and GPT-F-Fuzzer by 34.8%. And combining MetaBreak with those approaches raises jailbreak rates further. The Just Ask paper targets autonomous code agents and system prompt extraction. It reports full or near complete recovery across 41 black box commercial models under its consistency threshold.
That last one has an uncomfortable relationship with the tools many of us use every day. The Just Ask authors name Claude Code, Cursor, and GitHub Copilot as examples of the agent class where hidden instructions govern file explorers, shell executors, planners, and test harnesses. Their claim isn't that prompts are the only secret. It is that prompts are often treated like secrets while being exposed through ordinary interaction. If a code agent can be talked into recovering its own internal operating rules, then prompt confidentiality is a weak place to store power.
There is a social version of the same bug. We ask the model to be helpful, truthful, harmless, obedient to system rules, good at debugging, willing to explain itself and capable of acting through tools. Those goals collide. A curious code agent is almost designed to investigate hidden structure. So if hidden instructions also protect the system, you have put the lock in the same room as the curious tool that likes opening locks.
My read is that this moves the security conversation from better wording to better boundaries. Better wording still matters. Safer defaults still matter. But for tool calls, memory writes, and durable changes, authority has to live in the right component. If the same model that just read the untrusted page also decides the privileged action, the new papers give you a vocabulary for why that keeps breaking.
And the hopeful part is that the vocabulary is architectural, not fatalistic. Separate channels, typed boundaries, external authorization, replayable traces, and tool routing all become ordinary engineering vocabulary once people stop pretending the whole control problem can live inside a prompt. The day has a nice friction there. The agent builders are talking about traces and control planes, and the security researchers are giving them a reason to move more decisions outside the shared model context.
Axios has the clearest follow-up today on the model access fight. After last week's reports that the Trump administration asked OpenAI to slow the GPT 5.6 rollout and restricted Anthropic access, Axios frames today's update as a split inside the pro-AI coalition. Some people see release restrictions as national security screening. Others, including prominent tech allies of the administration, see the same restrictions as slowing American labs while Chinese competitors keep moving.
That is a hard coalition problem because both sides can make a serious argument. If a model is meaningfully dangerous, the government won't want to learn that from a public misuse incident. But if the access rule is opaque, the market hears something else. A frontier model can be delayed by a process nobody outside the room understands. That uncertainty changes the product before anyone touches the weights.
The Austria Anthropic item adds the geography. Reuters reports that Austria has been lobbying Europe to host Anthropic after US curbs on AI access. The important part isn't Austria as a single country making one pitch. It is the predictable consequence. If the United States turns frontier access into a managed queue, other jurisdictions will try to become the place where the queue is shorter, clearer, or more politically acceptable.
And NBC's polling item puts public pressure under that elite argument. Voters in both parties want tighter AI regulation, according to NBC's report. So this isn't just founders arguing with the White House. There is a public appetite for more control, a lab appetite for clearer rules, an investor appetite for predictable access, and a geopolitical fear that delay benefits China. You can hold all four in your head at once and still not get a clean policy.
I would carry one process point forward, legitimacy. Sorry, let me say that less like a memo. People will tolerate more restriction if they can understand who decides, what evidence is used, how long the review lasts, and what appeal or expansion path exists. If the system looks like private calls, political pressure, and sudden access lists, then even a defensible safety decision starts to look like industrial favoritism.
Yes, and that brings us back to yesterday's access arbitrage story, without rerunning it. The product is partly the model and partly the path to the model. Today, that path has a regulator standing in it, a European host raising a hand, and competitors trying to root around delay. That is a lot of institutional machinery for something we still mostly talk about as a model release.
A quick China map before we leave infrastructure. Four China-linked reports sit next to each other today. A reported $3 billion DRAM supply deal between CXMT and Tencent. Baidu's Kunlun Shin chip unit targeting a Hong Kong listing. China's Lineshine supercomputer taking the top spot on the June top 500 list with an all-CPU design and large robotics funding around companies like AI Squared and X Square. I wouldn't bundle those into one master plan. They are different actors and different layers.
But they show breadth. CXMT is memory supply. Kunlun Shin is domestic AI chips and capital markets. Lineshine is high-performance computing with ARM CPUs and high-bandwidth memory, which is a very different path from the NVIDIA-centered story. Robotics funding is embodied AI, where the model has to meet motors, sensors, factories, and warehouses. If you are only watching frontier model scores, you miss a lot of the stack being financed underneath and around them.
Lineshine is the clearest technical example because the top 500 number is concrete. The system reportedly sustained about 2.2 exaflops on LINPACK and did it with CPUs only, using ARM-based processors and high-bandwidth memory. That doesn't make it the best AI training machine. Low precision acceleration and software ecosystems still matter. The public claim is that China has a route to top-end compute performance that doesn't depend on the same GPU lane the US has tried to control.
And the memory deal belongs next to that because memory is the constraint everybody keeps rediscovering. You can have a brilliant accelerator and still wait on memory. You can have a national model program and still need domestic DRM contracts. Tencent buying from CXMT is a supply chain story, but it is also a confidence story. A major Chinese platform company is making commitments to a domestic memory maker, while export controls keep making foreign supply feel conditional.
So the quick version is, South Korea is making the capacity plan explicit, and China is showing multiple alternative paths at once. Memory contracts, chip IPOs, CPU-heavy supercomputing, and robotics funding don't all mean the same thing. Together, they make the AI stack feel less like a single American GPU-centered ladder and more like several countries trying to own different rungs before the next shortage arrives.
That also keeps the China story from becoming either panic or dismissal. Some of these efforts will overheat. Some will be politically steered in ways that waste money. Some will turn out to be much more capable than outsiders expected. Today's signal is the surface area. Memory, chips, supercomputers, and robots all getting capital in the same news cycle.
The labor story today is smaller than the infrastructure lead, but it is probably the one people feel most personally. The tech meme linked payroll item points to analysis that young workers in highly AI exposed jobs are shrinking as a category. Fortune's version cites Stanford linked work, saying employment for workers aged 22 to 25 in highly AI-exposed occupations is falling at about 3.8% per year. The Dallas Fed summary of related research puts the cumulative decline since 2022 at 13% for that young, highly exposed group.
The narrow unit matters. Young workers in exposed occupations. The broader labor market can look fine while the entry path into certain jobs gets narrower. And that matters because early career work is how people absorb the tacit parts of a field. If AI takes the draft memo, the basic analysis, the first pass at code, or the simple support queue, then the senior person gets leverage and the junior person loses reps.
OpenAI's EU jobs transition report gives the lab-authored side of the same conversation. It maps occupations into categories: higher automation potential, jobs likely to reorganize, jobs that may grow with AI, and jobs with less immediate change. That isn't a prediction that everyone in a category loses work. It is a framework for asking where task composition changes first. I appreciate that more than the apocalypse or boom binary, because it gives people something to inspect.
The hard part is that the map and the payroll signal live at different distances from the worker. A framework can say an occupation is likely to reorganize. A 23-year-old applying for the old version of that occupation experiences it as fewer callbacks, weirder interviews, and entry-level jobs that ask for senior judgment. The map can be analytically useful while the lived transition is still rough.
I would end today on the way these big systems become concrete. Monday's AI news was full of huge systems, national fabs, replayable agents, security boundaries, release politics, domestic memory, and labor maps. They don't collapse into one story. They do show AI turning model capability into surrounding institutions. South Korea needs a grid connection. Agent builders need traces. Security researchers want control outside the shared model channel. Workers need entry paths that survive automation of the first pass task. Those are different problems. And each one now has a source you can point to.
And the next evidence will be concrete too. Do the Korean fabs and data centers get permitted and powered? Do replay systems become normal in agent platforms, or stay conference demos? Do access rules become a published process or a set of phone calls? Do the young worker numbers spread beyond the most exposed occupations? The answers won't arrive as one grand announcement. They will show up as construction schedules, product defaults, policy documents, and hiring patterns.
Lenar Kess.